Hello and welcome to The Craft, the pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me today is someone who did a video confessional at my wedding. And, you know, he reminisced with some other co-hosts that I had, Paul Spohr and Eric Samulski, and even Alex Fast appeared, all in the same room. And the one thing they could all agree on was that there is no show sheet. There is nothing.
No rundown. Like
three things, no rundown, and we just go. And I appreciate, you know, it's on because he was like, and I love it. I love it so much. It's just, we just run with it and we go. We have a loose one. Don't worry. It's all in the head. All right. And Eno Saris is here. This is our special guest today because he just put out his ranks on The Athletic, and I got to check him over. I got to make sure they're okay. Make sure that, you know, there isn't anything that I go, what on earth is this? At the top of this, Eno, hi.
Well, we should really do this before my ranking comes out, because I actually like them. And like, I think that they would be stronger if we argued with each other before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If we did this, like, okay, you know what? Maybe I should change this or that.
Mm. I don't want to, like, you know, be influenced by others.
Well, right.
So you don't really look at them.
I don't at all. I had to. The only reason I'm looking at yours now is because I'm talking to you, Eno.
You're right. Okay?
I mean, it's really, I think it's so important to do that, because what happens then is you have your reasoning for everything, but then you all of a sudden get extra reasoning that doesn't actually fit with everything else that you're doing in the system.
I actually see this two ways. One way is that when you do projections and when you do any sort of analysis of things, like, usually the meta is better. Like, if you put together four projections, it's almost always better than if you have one, you know? Right. And so that in that way, to get the most correct rankings, it might be best if you put me and you and Paul into a room and we duked it out, and we had, like, these are the one.
Eric Samulski's got to get in there, by the way.
Eric's in there, and we have our one true rankings, and those might be the best correct. This is sort of the idea with Fantasy Pros and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But I did do one draft this year where I used the collective approach for the batters, right? And then for the pitchers, I just used oopsie projections.
Okay.
You know, with, of course, my own sort of ranking and bias to which pitchers I wanted off that. But I just used oopsie. And it was very interesting because it was an auction draft. And in that auction draft, all the hitters were going within a dollar of my numbers. It was like, a dollar two up or a dollar two down. Yeah, and it was like really hard to be like, ooh, I just need to pick players. It's like, you know, it's almost like there's a dollar next to a player and you just pick a player, you know? Like, it wasn't anything like that. But when we got to pitchers, I had a different view into a different universe. Yeah. It was like, there were guys, I got Reed Detmers for like $6, and on my sheet, he was a $12 player, And like, I got, you know, Cease, and I got all the like stuffists, you know? And I was like, this is kind of fun because I'm taking an angle and I'm having, I understand this is a view into this person's universe and this person's way of thinking about things. So I think it might be best for listeners to, like, look at Nick's and look at Eno's and sort of, you know, put them together and figure out what they like out of both, you know. And it might be best for us, because I'm a little bit like, I don't really look at until we do these pods.
Right.
And I often feel like, you know, we talk and then I'm like, I think maybe you're right. I think maybe
I mean, like, look, I think about Andrew Abbott every day. Okay.
Oh, well. That one's maybe turning out the way we thought.
Right. Well, no. I was the one higher than you on Abbott, is my point. And what's, I think the really interesting part about it is that even as you described it, it's defining the average, though. Mm-hmm. Right. And I constantly wrangle or like wrestle with this, where you don't want to be average. You know, you're not actually trying, you know, Ariel Coben honestly put it this best of, like, if you leave your auction with spending $260 for $260 worth of players,
right,
you are an average team, right? And I feel that way a lot with projections of, I don't feel like you can follow it to a T because you don't want an average. You want a guy, get a guy at a certain place and then he's better than that place, right? Or if you get a guy later on, then you move on from that and try and find something else. And it's hard to, you know, it's a different kind of thinking process in my head of trying to make sure I'm okay and above the field as opposed to being good and average.
I mean, I think there's a lot of implications of what we're talking about, but like you also, like, for example, let's say you're an organization talking about bidding on the free agent market, right?
Right.
You know, that's a very similar thing to an auction and a fantasy. And so if what you're saying is like, well, go get your guy. Then if your projections say go to this number or whatever, but it is still good to know what the room thinks.
Oh yeah.
You know, otherwise then you go and give, you know, $200 million to Tetsuya Yamai because your numbers say that you're supposed to, right?
Yeah, right.
And instead of being like, ooh, we got him for 60, yeah. You know, so, you know, there's something to even running a team and running a fantasy team or just thinking about things where, like, I think I would love to know for every player the median value, and then I would also love to know the top end value.
Yeah.
You know, so that when we're picking players, especially because I was like, oh, all these dollars, they're the same. We all look at the same sheets, you know, then I'd like to know, well, we're all looking at the same sheets, but this guy's 75th percentile outcome is just so much better. And that's what I ended up doing. Like I ended up populating my team with Cam Smith, Wyatt Langford. You know, these are all hitters. Sorry. But, you know, I ended up at Dylan Cease. I ended up hitting like guys where I was like, this dollar sign fits what I have budget wise and sits okay in the room and is fine for the room, but the high end outcome is like really, really good.
So, and I mean, that's the, you know, obviously the common thing of that high outcome. I probably would weigh the low one when you're talking about the first five rounds or so relative of a snake draft, right? Because then it's about not getting, you know, finding that value later to make up for not doing it early. It's like, if you reverse that, it's tough. If you try to chase the high one, then you can lose your draft, is essentially what you say. And you have to have that foundational value before you can do that, right?
And how does this port over to early season strategy?
You know,
because, you know, the high-end outcomes are still, like, Jesus Luzardo has the high-end outcomes. He has the best fastball he's ever had.
Yeah, you know? It's wild, right? He's 98 yesterday.
Yeah, the best fastball he's ever had. He's got the best K-minus BB he's ever had, the best Sierra, all the peripherals, stuff plus. Everything's like, yay! And then you look over to the ERA and you're like, what? So, like, no, but nobody's dropping him and nobody's, you know. So,
look, here's the thing,
you can do about it.
You say that.
I'm going to ride this out.
You say that. So you're at, when you make a really good point of like, yeah, we don't look at other people's rankings, but we have to have some understanding of what the crowd is doing. And there are two ways that I get my reference point on that. One is I do my daily streaming article. And with that, we have rostership through Fantasy Pros. So I can see things like Bubba Chandler is rostered in fewer leagues than Tanner Bibee. And I just go, you know, and then I get my Twitch stream in the morning. I get questions from people. Should I drop this guy for that guy? This guy for that guy? And then I'm getting a sense of like, cool, this is what the public perception is. Is this, this, and that? Okay, I get it now, you know? And sometimes I'm just like, why is no one going after this? Why is everyone believing this? You know, there's some that it's two Tobys. Both are excelling in our Vargas rules, but one is loved and one is hated. And I'm like, but why? I don't know. So that's part of the fun, I think, with rankings, especially seeing yours, is I like just get a finger on the pulse of you know, what's going on and what you believe in and what you don't. And I'm going to tell you guys right now, top 15, don't care. I don't care. we're moving past that. Nothing's really changed. Nothing's interesting.
You're going to pick a guy up off of waivers. You know, there's not a lot of movement for me. I mean, what I did do is the Nick Pollock, I pulled the injury guys out. But the weird thing of that happens is between the first preseason, the last preseason rank and the first regular season ranks, people will be like, why'd this guy move up 10 points? And I'm like, well, everybody moves up 10 points because I took all the injured guys out.
I have a section dedicated to my article that's like, the guys I removed this week, thus a plus X for the top 60 universe. Not even state like where it was to help that. Sometimes I remove guys and sometimes it's like, sometimes it's not. But yeah, it's certainly like everyone just wants to see his number go up, right? Mm-hmm. And well, look, top 15, whatever. I will mention I did move down Logan Webb a little bit, just because it's and looking I did more too. Like the Wiz will look, be.
It doesn't look like I moved him down a lot because of the injury.
Right. I have to say, one, Braxton Ashcraft, 32. Talk to me. So tell me what you're seeing that you like more than you saw last year in Braxton Ashcraft.
Oh, I think that was I just upped his innings pitched. Mm-hmm. You know, his ERA projection is in line with the other people ranked around him. You know, I don't necessarily think he's a better pitcher. I think he's a slightly worse because he's, you know, things are down a little bit in terms of stuff. But I think he's more likely to maybe pitch 150 innings this year. So I think I moved him up to 140 innings, and that helped me. And then, you know, again, some of that moving up is just other guys going down around him. I mean, how many people did I move injured-wise out of the top 40 ahead of him? Probably at least six. So he moved up 12, and six of that was injury.
You know, Sam.
You don't believe in the injuries either. You think he's gonna be injured.
Well, I mean, I had the whole thing in my head. Braxton Ashcraft. This is what I'm gonna say. I'm gonna say this. I like this. That's really helping him against lefties. And I don't know if the fastballs are good enough, but the fastball's a little bit better. But is it enough? And does he have the good enough command to really sustain it around guys like Eovaldi or like Michael King, who's maybe looking a little bit better now? Robbie Ray's underneath him too. And then I have to scroll down to 51. To number 51.
We're just going to internally have an argument about this one.
And this is a guy who, you know, his prophecy is that he is an ace is going to ace caliber pitcher. It's in his last name. I'm an AGA. I gave it to him yesterday. How do you have Shota Imanaga, who has gotten an A-plus in stuff from us in some of his games on our cards at 51, you know, he's at 92 on his four seamer, not the 90 and change that we saw last year. It's a better four seamer now. The splitter is everything you'd want it to be. This is Shota's world.
Why is he? The MSBB is pretty intense. And you know, I have a 4 ERA projection on him. It's the highest of anybody that has as high a projection as he has. You know, I pushed him as far as the projections have. I do worry about him in terms of, like, we've seen second half fades in both years he's pitched.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's a 92-2 now, but I don't know that it'll finish a 92-2. And I don't know, you know, both years that he's pitched, he's looked great for the first 2 months. And both years, as it's warmed up in Wrigley, it's not looked as great later. Mm.
Yeah, the June in Wrigley. All right, we'll hopefully he gets like 2 instead of 5. We just don't start him for those 2, okay? I know. No, that's actually a really good point of the second half diminishing. I will say the what we've seen so far is better than what we saw at the beginning of last year for Shota. And it is interesting that you have him projected 142 innings, if I'm reading this right on your sheet. But a 92% health grade, which is incredibly favorable. And I do wonder if there is. Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't include anything from Japan. Yeah, injury wise.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started with the depth charts projection of Fangraphs. So, you know, they had 144. And so I basically had, you know, if you had an A health grade, I basically gave you what the depth charts did. But if you had like a D health grade, I subtracted like 30 innings off of the depth charts, stuff like that.
Well, so, I'm going to leave it at this. I'm a huge fan of
Shota Imanaga. Last thing about the half splits.
Yeah.
279 career first half ERA, 379 second half. And that's scientific, but it does go in hand in hand with declining fastball velo and changing home park.
So, right. So the declining fastball velo, absolutely. I understand that point. I'm very much against first half, second half splits or home away. I think it's random grouping. Just heard Smolski about 2 hours ago on the Corner podcast. but I do want to move on to a few other guys. And first of all, I see that I think you lowered Eury Pérez. Is that right?
I did.
And I did too. And I wonder if it's for the same reason. Why are you lower on Perez now?
Well, going into the season, I said he wouldn't have a home run problem because the stuff model predicted that his pitches all had better than average home run splits. I don't know, man. At some point, you got to be like, but he's still giving up home runs. You know? And then lastly, I think, you know, he has the Michael King's is probably better now, but him and Michael King have the worst location numbers in my top 100 pitchers.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, this is last year or this year?
This year.
This year. Eury Pérez, I agree with that one completely. I watch him and he just does not act like a pitcher. He's got great stuff, but the four seamers isn't going upstairs that needs to. The breaking pitches are not reliable. And, you know, when we do these rankings in the offseason, it's all about how much do we bake in the fact that these guys are going to develop or not. And I'm thinking, all right, Eury, Tommy John, sure, and then come back and everything should be better and we get, you know, take steps forward and we haven't seen it yet. And now it's the point that is so hard for us is like, well, it should, but when?
And yeah, I mean, he has a similar stuff plus to Jacob Mizorowski and Cam Schlittler and even Chris Sale. So like top end stuff. But this is also the ranking in which K minus BB is a big part of what I'm doing. And, you know, he's got a 10% K minus BB. And also in terms of Ks, he's down from last year. The good news is swing strikes are even up. So, and the velo's up. So he can still figure it out. And that's why he didn't drop out of the 30. But when you're, you know, comparing him to like a Chase Burns or Jacob Mizorowski, two other guys where you're thinking, you know, they have top end stuff. Will they put it all together this year? Obviously, Chase Burns and Mizorowski, I think, deserve to be ahead of him because they're commanding it better. They're getting better results. They have better K-BB. You know,
yeah.
So he had to drop behind those guys at the very least.
Yeah, I understand that completely. There are obviously a lot more that I really want to talk to Eno about, and we'll get to all of those after this break. Yeah. Eno. You had something you would like to say.
What are you doing with the guy after Eury Pérez?
Yeah, right? Nothing. No, I actually removed him down to roughly there. That's Kyle Bradish, everyone. And obviously on Monday, I didn't know about the start on Wednesday for Bradish. What's so fascinating, it was 98.9 on his sinker. That was the max in the first inning. And then it went down to 91.9 at one point, I think it was. Later in the game. But keep in mind, that's the cut fastball. And the sinker stayed at like 94, 95. So I think there's something to that of because he throws a, I hate that we call his four-seamer a four-seamer because it really is a cutter. I can't express that enough.
Cut ride or something.
Do we have terms for like negative, like actual glove side? Like I call it underwater for your kick changes. If it goes underneath the X-axis, I don't have it for like left and right panels, you know, like going over on cut. I used to call it the plane of 1,000 cuts, but I need something else for that. Anyway, yeah, it's a proper cutter. And that means that you are going to maybe have some fluctuations of velocity more because you might be getting too far on the side of it or the release of it takes off that velocity. So it's not
especially if you throw a big old breaking ball otherwise, right?
Right. So it's, you know, with Bradish, honestly, left fielder could have caught that ball, 200 runs. Instead of they come in, right? And I just think this guy is still really good. Breaking stuff is amazing. It's just a matter of time before it really normalizes for the most part. So
I think what I'm just having a little bit of a hard time with is that this, the location numbers, you know, are sort of coming online now. You know, about 4 or 5 starts in, they start to become more stable. And his location numbers are not good. Mm-hmm. At least they're not terrible, but they're not good compared to what he did in the past. And, you know, he's got this kind of arsenal where he's got this elite curveball, and then he actually needs to be able to command around that because the other pitches aren't that great. So he needs to put those pitches where they need to be around this big old breaking ball in order for it all to work. And in the past, he's had like well above average location numbers, even coming back from Tommy John. So I thought, oh yeah, he's going to do that again. And here we have an 11% walk rate, a 96 location plus. And even when you go down into the zone numbers, the worst zone percentage of his career, just that's a very simple one, but also 50% first strikes. The league average is around 60. His is 58. So he's not getting ahead. He's not getting count leverage. He's not getting to the places where he can throw that curveball. And that's why his strikeout rate is down. So yeah. I don't know how to prognosticate going forward, because going forward you would hew closer to stuff. But you know, you look at something like Sierra is a pretty good predictor. That's like he's got a 407 there. K minus BB is below average. Stuff is above average, but not by a lot. So he just kept dropping and dropping in my rankings. And he's, you know, the way you can tell, you know, in my rankings a lot of times is the hard ranks for me are the guys that where their projected ERA is better than guys ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like, you know, with Shota, like he has the highest ERA. I have him as high as I have, you know, and he's higher than people who have better ERAs that are projected. You know what I'm saying? So like,
oh yeah. Like Trevor Rogers at 27.
Yeah. Trevor Rogers. I have a 4.3 projection.
He's just so good. I don't care.
And then I have Mackenzie Gore has a worse projection than Yuri Perez and has a worse projection than Kyle Bradish. But I have Gore ahead. And Gore, honestly, he's lost velo over the course of seasons. He's petered out. He's had great starts like this before. But there's some subtle changes to his pitch movements. His K minus BB is great. And it's a new team and with a new defense and a new park. I feel pretty good about putting Gore ahead of Bradish.
Yeah. So, okay. Two things quickly. One, I mean, on Gore, I cannot ignore the fact that pitching for the Nationals last year, I know it's different this year a little bit, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm still waiting to see kind of what the effect is of the new reign over there in the Capitol, but it does have a massive impact for a guy like Gore who had to act like the veteran before. And I do wonder if that will make him last more through the season, playing more meaningful games, hopefully, having Eovaldi there, having a much better home park, just overall wanting to endure the grind of a full season more, right? And for the most part with Mackenzie Gore, I mean, yeah, you just had a really bad start in Sacramento because it's Sacramento, and I'm not really too worried about that. Now, going back to Bradish quickly, the only point I want to say is April/March, those are the months that correlate least to a full season. Especially early on, too, because you have... I know the classic thing is, wait, hold on a second. I thought cold weather hurt hitters more than it hurt pitchers. Yes, on an average. Guys are very different. And weather changes multiple times, and it is not out of the question that Bradish just wasn't great out of the gates and needs a little bit more time to get comfortable. I don't know what all the reason is that he had worse location, but it's not really his MO from everything that we've seen before. And I'm very willing. I think I'm more willing in the month of April than any other month. And I'm pretty sure you agree with it. To say, all right, this guy has been all of these things before. And now he's not exhibiting exactly that, but he's still throwing the same velocity. He's still throwing, getting whiffs on these pitches, like this similar stuff, locating a little bit worse. But like, all right, like we're going to not go too overboard otherwise. Because, yeah, he was this human for three games or whatever, but he's could be a different human very shortly after.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, so
we're on the same
page. K-Live's BB and some of those peripherals, I could have pushed him down further. So
right,
definitely exactly. Track record is still part of it. I'm
moving guys. I'm similar spot.
Yeah, I'm moving guys within a band that is described by their track record, I think.
Yeah, I would even say that it's kind of like a tier is right there with Gavin Williams right after. And Jose Soriano's at 37. I am hard to look at right now. I know, everyone. If you're not watching me on YouTube right now, you'll see that it's a ghastly sight because I have egg all over my face. It is terrible because I was like, you can't do Jose Soriano. You can't. He's destined for a 140 whip. It's just he'll do good one game and then he'll be terrible the next. He can't throw strikes. It's a terrible defense. I don't trust the Angels. And it's been like the best start of any right?
And I kept wanting to, you know, he could go higher based on his projected ERA. So like I have him at 37 and I have him, he's the lowest of a three, he has a 3.5 ERA projection. That's, and he's everybody with the 3.5 ERA projections in the top 25, you know? Yeah. So I'm still trying to bake in my inner Nick, because you're not wrong. Like he is a ground ball guy in front of a really bad defense. And it's still going to be a really bad defense. But the four seam has added enough whiff. The four seam has just really changed.
Okay. I've got you here. I know the answer. Also, by the way, I would have him at 36, not 37, because how do you have Luis Castillo at 36? I don't know. And we'll talk about that one soon. But Jose Soriano's four seamer, right? This is actually, I think, the biggest difference from last year. And noticing that, he's getting more O-swing all of a sudden on the four seamer. And it's so close to me. Like, the sample we have of Jose Soriano throwing games just in general, but also really his four-seamer to right-handers, very small at the moment. And if you get a glimpse of it from last year to this year, you'll kind of see that the four-seamers he's thrown to right-handers are on the edge and more competitive in general, but it's only like 30 of them or something of a small sample. Mm-hmm. And I see that and I go, okay, but this isn't like I'm seeing all of them just boom, moved over like they're astrophages. Yes, that is a wonderful Project Hail Mary reference. You should go see that movie. It's incredible. I read the book. It's so good too. But right, it's not moving dramatically over. It's like, I got a little bit better at this one over here. And I go, all right, it's very, very fathomable that that you don't have that in the next start. And then the four-seamer whiffs go down. But I have to weigh in that like maybe actually that does stick around. Maybe there was a little bit of an adjustment
here. I think just using it is making a different part of the zone viable.
Sure.
Even if he'll have worse games. I mean, duh.
You know that. Everyone knows that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I think that what the worst games will look like is what you're talking about. He can't hit those spots, and then people don't really swing at the four seam. And he becomes more conventional, but it still means that they have to in the scouting report, approach. They're even in the next game, they'll still be like, he's still going to throw that four seam, right? And that means they have to think about the top and the bottom. I think in the past, it's been like, it's Soriano. You got to think in or out, down.
Can he execute it like consistently for a while?
I don't think he has bad command, like really bad command.
Well, it's a complete, he was like the gray undulator almost of just one game. It's like, nice. You got the curveball going down and away, singles over there. Like, this is easy. No problem. Like these lovely blobs. And then it's just, 42% strike rate today on the curveball. Well, we'll try again next week,
Well, and I think that's where the four seam helps also is if something else is, it gives them another pitch that could be working that day. The only pitch that shows up for every start for Soriano is a sinker.
Sure. So
this gives him another pitch he's throwing. And he's throwing the slider and splitter a little bit more. I mean,
the splitter. I mean, I'm not going to be sold on that. I'm really gonna...
I know.
Maybe
if he ever wins a Cy Young, he's like throwing the slider and splitter. They're all in there and the four seems good and he does it for the whole year.
Okay.
I'm not saying he will.
So here's the 37. If someone were to offer you Jose Soriano for Shota Imanaga, you say no.
Wait, why?
No, you say no. I don't want Jose Soriano. I have Shota Imanaga. If someone gives you, you would not trade away Jose Soriano for Shota Imanaga. Is that correct?
I would keep Jose Soriano.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah. What about instead of Shota Imanaga? I'm just going through your list just because I think these are the decisions a lot of people are making right now, of like, do I sell high on Jose Soriano? I personally would. But like Robbie Ray is another one that is kind of like, that's a safety net that I get with Robbie Ray.
Such a high floor. All the home starts at the very least, yeah.
So, but you have them neck and neck, right? So you're saying, the ceiling of this...
I think much harder is the next one. if you're offering me, if I have Emmett Sheehan and you're offering me Shota Imanaga, then yeah, maybe I have Shota too low, because I might take Shota. Because Emmett Sheehan, you don't know what his fastball velo is.
No, I was doing it for Jose Soriano.
The
whole practice was, but right. Yeah. Sure. I'm with you on Emmett Sheehan of like, he just had one really good start, but then it's also two tough ones now. We're still going to be in this like purgatory a bit with him for a moment. I would honestly take Bubba Chandler over Jose Soriano. Just because I know those starts were bad. But like,
That's that like sort of 10, 12 team mentality of like leaping for the upside, I think. And Soriano has better floor, I think. You know?
Well,
and so
I don't know if I agree with it, because the floor of
Chandler right now has like a 1.5 whip, and
trust me. Know. Oh, I know. But I'm talking about the next 5 months, you know.
Right. Yeah, I know.
But yeah, Jose Soriano's floor is like the ball and chain that makes you lose your league.
Because
right? Yeah, it like completely tears you down. That's the floor of Soriano. It still exists. It's not as likely as it was before, obviously. But it's a very interesting practice, I think, because it's so hard. This is the hardest point of the year when it comes to pitching assessment.
And it's also a tough part of the rankings, because you know, the top 30 I feel really good about.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you get to like sort of 30, 35 through 55, I spent so much time ordering these guys. They went up and down. Emmett Sheehan was 52. And you know, then he had the good start and he was 35. And then I was like, well, that's too hard. Then he's the 39. You know, it's like there's a lot of bouncing around in this.
Well,
part.
Here's the thing, you know, you're going to get accused of two things. One, too volatile every week. And two, you have take lock. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Which one is it? which one do I have?
And for me, the easy part is to just like, you know, start with the projections as.
Yeah, right.
That's my ground truth. So like, and it's a boring answer. And it happens a lot on when we talk about it, things like this. I'm like, well, I have Shota as high as I could push a 401.
Projection,
you know, so.
Right. And I mean, obviously, as you guys know, I don't have that tether, right? Yeah. I'm much more, you can absolutely call this, I am the vibes guy. I am the like, just, you know, I do this every night and I study them. So I'm just going off of my mental model. If I really need to look more into it, then I formulate in my head. And it's like a massive cauldron of potential risk and arsenal expression. And
I mean, I guess
that kind of stuff.
For Bubba in particular, you know, we just talked about him on Rates and Barrels today in depth. And I do like him a lot, and we were really, you know, we gave him ace like upside, and I think that's obviously expressed when you watch him and when you see him pitch. But, you know, one of the parts that was interesting for me was trying to find a comp for him in terms of a fastball changeup guy with a hard gyro slider.
I have one.
Well, I was like Emmett Sheehan, but Emmett Sheehan, who?
That's good. I was going to go with Logan Henderson.
But then I was
it's not quite right.
I was also like, give me a veteran. Like
Luis Castillo early on.
He was fastball changeup and he was through the
And then he developed slider. More into the slider. Now lower arm slot. And then, but in sinker was there too.
I was thinking maybe Logan Gilbert. I don't think Chandler has the same extension.
But. Yeah. This is the fun part, guys, because fastball changeup is generally not what you want. Thing is, I remember actually first pitch Arizona when we're doing our little funny video of like, okay, who are the guys? This guy, that guy, wearing glasses. And you said Bubba Chandler is a changeup guy. And I pulled them down. I was like, what? Because I just considered Chandler as a four seamer slider guy that had a changeup too. And I think his
changeup is his best pitch.
I think it's his four seamer. But I mean, it's a
saying,
right? I think we had that exact conversation.
So anyway, it's a really good four seamer. But you know, another thing that happens with guys whose best pitch is their four seamer is they don't always have great strikeout rates.
So that takes me to number 58, Ryne Nelson. And what are you doing?
I don't know, man. That guy, I give up, dude. He has a 4.06 ERA projection. I'm just going with that. I don't
ignore it. Get out of here. I know. I'll never honestly.
You're super into this.
Oopsie. Of course not. But you're stupid oopsie.
You like his new gyro slider.
Okay. I love that the Four Seamer is still absurdly good. It is such a, it's like one of the best foundations. And also in Chase Field, I think helps it. I got to get pure data on that, but generally domes help vert on four seamers.
Oh yeah, they definitely, they help stuff plus too.
And so you have that. And this year he's finally dividing. He's finally going that gyro slider, which I think is a nice one. It's like 89 miles per hour. Has it's good separation from the four seamer. I think he just keeps throwing that more. That's going to be better. Then you have against
his strikeout lefties. Rate is all the way up to 22%.
Great. What do you got for his like that?
Because it's his career strikeout rate is 19%, and the average strikeout rate in baseball is 23%.
That's fine. If you're telling me that Ryan Nelson is giving me an average 22-23% and he's going six innings all the time and he has a low whip and a good ERA, like what do we not want here? What is Ryan Nelson hurting you at?
What's he doing second and third time through the lineup? He's fastball slider. Same thing. Fastball, he's done it forever. What's he doing against lefties third time through the
lineup? Four seamer. What's next? Answer is four seamer.
The answer is always four seamer. I mean, who was it that was like that? I made some joke about what's coming up. Oh, it was Jake McGee.
Jake McGee.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jake
my
McGee.
God.
Yeah. The answer was always, what's the next pitch? The answer was always four seamer.
Yep.
Yeah. So Ryan Home Nelson finger, is baby. The starting version of Jake McGee. I don't know, man. It just doesn't seem like Sierra's a 429. You know, the K-minus BB is below average. It's
I'm telling you I'll say this. What you're seeing is if he doesn't get better and is not able to, like, the floor is wonderful. And I think there's a good chance at more. That's the whole point with Ryan Nelson. I don't think you'll lose your team having Ryan Nelson around. There are a lot of guys around this that are, the floor is, they're off your team and whatever. Ryan Nelson's not leaving your team. That's where I'm at with this. I will go to bat with the fella. Probably not, and I'll strike out. Emerson Hancock, 65. He's looked impressive. I mean, egg on my face. I was so like, Emerson Hancock, get out of here. You haven't figured anything out, blah, blah, blah. Didn't have arm angle data from the spring. And the first start, that four seamer was absurd. I questioned if he would have more, and he has had more since. Why are you at 65 and not higher?
The the cool thing about Hancock, you know, people were asking me, like, you know, why is this stuff up so much? Because he's got a 106 stuff plus, and this is a guy who had a 90 last year. And if you look at just his movement plots, you'd say, sweeper has about the same movement as last year, got a new cutter, he's got an inch of ride. You know, you're not telling me that an inch of ride makes you from 90 stuff plus to 106. That can't be. And the answer is a little bit yes, not because of that, because he also dropped his arm angle 5 degrees and added basically more than an inch of ride, 2 inches of ride. So the two of those things in tandem means that his four seam is like just a lot better than it was before, because now it looks like it's coming at hitters from an angle where it should just go down, and you know, it should go sideways, and instead it's coming up at them.
It's
so it's a much better forcing.
It's spotted at the top of the zone consistently too, which I'm really surprised. And the cutter, you know, I remember the first game against the Guardians, Eric's mostly be like, you gotta do more with Hancock. This is incredible. I heard the whole thing about him. So I'm like, cool, I've never seen this before from him. And all he had was the four seamer. The sweeper was like a 40% strike rate, but it was all lefties. So what is he going to do against righties? He can't buy that the sweeper is the number two pitch for him right now. Cutter showed up, and that has become his number two. Great. He has a sinker still against righties. He still has, even the home run he allowed to Xander Bogaerts, a 2-run shot, was a sinker inside, like, good one, right? Not something terrible. Mm-hmm. So I'm a huge believer right now in Hancock. I've completely flipped. And I see like Zach Gallen and Soroka and Clay Holmes. And I'm just thinking, man, I rather Hancock. Oh. Like Gallen, he can't do for a bit. Yeah. Go ahead.
Bryce Miller.
Yeah, he exists.
Are you going to send him down and keep Hancock up?
So this is what I'm going to tell you. Bryce Miller, I don't know when he's returning, by the way. I know he came to the team over the weekend.
He had a good bullpen. Right.
Okay. So we're still like 3-4 weeks away is what that means to me. So any time that in the past, I think Will Warren was an example. What happens when somebody comes back? I can't remember who it was, middle of last season. What's going to happen, right? When Luis Seal comes back or whatever, and other things happened. It's so rare for a team to just be completely fine. And then this excellent pitcher who they have now is now displaced. I could even throw at you, I know you're going to hate me for this. You're going to absolutely, you know what I'm going to say. That Hancock, if he's continuing to pitch as he's pitching right now, there's no way the Mariners don't keep him in the rotation when clearly there's someone else who's going to be.
Shush your face with Luis Castillo.
There's no way I could go.
There's no way. There's no way, dude.
Luis Castillo is just getting worse and worse.
He's fine, dude. He's not great, but he's going to have like a 3.5 ERA at home this year, all year.
You sure? Because he just lost 700 runs against in Seattle. That's what killed me. Is like you have Luis Castillo. You don't want to start him outside of home. So that's already 50%. And then the one time you do.
Yeah, that would suck.
It's like, what do I do as a manager? You know, and just so you guys know, when it comes to Luis Castillo, I loved him for ages. I was the guy that was too high on it that I started the fireside.
I think you're missing some things, dude.
What am I missing?
His velo is up from last year. His call strikes and walks are up from last year. His Sierra's down from last year. His K-Mice BB is up from last year. Yeah, well, his swinging strike rate is up from last year.
What is the velo that's increased? It's like 95 and changes as opposed to 94.8 or something.
I mean, it's up only 0.2 over last year's average, but it's the best April average he's had in 2 or 3 years.
Oh, that is surprising.
He usually has bad Aprils all the time. And
he's the one that I looked up at Fangraphs weather splits. And like the first one was Luis Castillo April. I was like, cool, this works. Yep. This is.
So I don't know. I know it looks like he sucks right now, but I'm like, he looks like he sucks every beginning of the year. And
Luis Castillo's 2025 was 4 months of being terrible.
You thought he sucked last year. He had a 3.54 ERA.
Oh my God. You just made my point. Where it was 4 months of being terrible. And his whole season on paper was saved because he had like a 6-game stretch that was great. And then, a 3.5 ERA because he had the best 4-seamer command I've ever seen Luis Castillo have. He had like a 4+ ERA for ages.
Last March, April, he had a 3.6, then he had a 3, then he had a 3.9, then he had a 2. That must be what you're talking about. Then he had an August with a 6, and then he had a September with a 2.45. So he really only had one bad month last year.
Get out of here. Was it really that even?
Yeah. He had no month with an ERA worse than 4.
This is what we got here. All right. Anyway, I'm going to move on to one more guy. We'll do that after this break. So we're back, and I apologize. Eno is right. The ERA was not bad with Luis Castillo until August. He had a 3.7 ERA through his first 16 games of the year, so I'm thinking of. But he had a 1.27 whip with a sub-20% K rate in that time.
He's not great. I also have him to put people in context, I have him what?
36.
All right. Maybe that's too high. I don't know. He just always shows up with a 3.5 ERA at the end of the year.
The great undulator of Jose Berrios. He is a Toby. All right. We got to go on to a couple others really quickly. First of all, I just want to say I'm happy that you had Brandon Sproat at 78 before even today. Thank you for being a believer. That's higher than I had him. I had him at 100. Because I was like, I understand in 12 teamers that you just want to move on right now, but I'm still a believer. I'm going to have him on this list. I think he's going to be better. But
there was a definite little sort of inner Nick Pollock moment with some of those rankings right there, where I have Painter, Tony, not necessarily and Mick Abel. I have those guys in the 70s, mostly because, you know, even if some of the projections of the guy behind them were worse, I mean, Andrew Painter has a 4.5 ERA projection from Oopsie. Noah Schultz, I put it 77. I was like, these are the guys that you want to put on your roster. You don't really want to put Brady Singer. You might be okay, like Noah Kahn, like, you know, Nick Martinez, like, you know, those are guys that you want based on what their start is this week. So I was like, kind of like, you know, those are my hype guys. So in the 70s, I put some hype guys. Hey, Carmen Mlodzinski kind of.
It was interesting.
I kind of like it.
I mean, the four seamer and sinker, I don't, but the splitter to lefties, that was really good. I don't.
What do you think of Schultz's debut? I mean, he was nervous as hell and had no command. Right.
We have a new phrase, you know. I know. For those who hate phrases, I'm really sorry. It's called the pilot rule, like a pilot episode, right? But it's a pitcher.
You leave him on your
initial line, often terrible. And it becomes a debut downer, right? A debut downer. So that's always the rule. It's like Paul Skenes' debut is the one I use all the time as an example. Not a good fantasy start. So yeah, that's what happens all the time. All the jitters. I think we haven't seen all of it. Changeup should be better, or at least exist with Noah Schultz.
Yeah, he didn't really.
Slider wasn't thrown much to right-handers.
He was so in love with his fastballs.
Yeah, it was a little shocking to me. It's a very strange arm angle. High release height at the low arm angle and everything is a different look, 6'10 and all. His cutter inside is, I think, the most impressive part to me. That cutter location inside of righties is great, but the four-seamer and sinker location, not as much. And that messed them up a ton. So I put out a video of it, guys. If you want to find out more about Noah Schultz, I did a breakdown video of it. And I do say he didn't know where it was going with the fastballs. More so, not the cutter is what I mean
by cutter, that. The misses were still close to the zone.
Yeah, the cutter... that's my favorite part about him, but he needs a change of down away. Like that is.
I was thinking about that because it's like he's gonna do cutter and sweeper against righties. I don't know.
It's weird. And we didn't see sinkers inside to lefties, which I'm just like, dude, that's gotta do that. Oh my god!
I was focused on the righties. I mean, the righties. I was like, cutter sweeper could work, but. You need more pitches than that. And he was trying so hard with the four seam and sinker, and it wasn't going anywhere. And he doesn't really have great shape on those pitches. It's just,
oh no. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I would like to have him. It's going to be a tough start next time as well for Noah Schultz. So I don't know if I necessarily want to do it. I think he's going to the Athletics next. And I'm like, Sacramento, I don't want to do that. But Mick Abel, behind Reynaldo Lopez.
He looked so, but yeah, that's a Discord thing. I've got somebody in my Discord who's banging the drum for Reynaldo Lopez.
Doesn't matter. Out. Who are they? Kick him out. Sorry, no, whoever you just, are. Sure, you're nice.
They but made a one,
you know, like this.
They I'm made sorry. One good point that made Lopez go up like three or four spots.
What is it? What is it?
The range on Lopez's fastball velos is really large. And has been since he's become a starter. Uh-huh. So the average fastball velo may not capture how good he can actually be. So Stuff Plus may not capture sort of what Reynaldo Lopez can do when he wants to get an out or when he's facing a harder hitter. So he goes into his pocket and gets an extra two ticks of velo when he needs it. His range is like five or six ticks between his top end velo on his fastball and his bottom.
So that's why we saw 86 and 92 in 93 in spring. But with Reylo, the biggest problem is that he does not throw his slider for strikes. Mm. And I just cannot get behind this. He does not have a secondary pitch of 60% strikes or higher. That it's.
I'm not generally super high on him, but is that a problem he's had his whole career?
He did in 2024. It was part of, but that was like absurd. He was also throwing two ticks harder. That range. I imagine that range is still moving up. That you're talking about the four seamer in that time. Also had more. Mm-hmm. I think with the curve. I could be wrong, but I mean, it wasn't great until 24. That was like the first year he really converted to a starter, right?
Yeah.
And then he had that ridiculous like 2 ERA and 130 innings. Regardless, Mick Abel looked great. I think there's going to be bumps and all that kind of stuff, but he's really cool. I don't think you know, we're both on the same page there.
It's one of those like, he pleases every model. Everything looks good.
It's so fun. And oh my gosh, how are you going to do this to me? How are you going to put Mitch Keller above my boy Randy Vasquez?
Not by a lot.
You
just
know you were going to talk to me? Like, I don't.
I guess I am worried that Randy Vasquez drops down to like 19% strikeout again.
His velocity is held.
He has held. And he's still, even had, he had a bad start and he still got 6Ks. So,
yeah. And that was a day when he had like terrible changeup feel, like 21% strikes with the changeup to lefties, which is like, no, that can happen.
And I generally have Randy higher than his ERA projection, so I generally like him. And
they don't know the new stuff as much, you know? They don't care as much about the new stuff that we do.
Well, they do. I mean, Oopsie should have that in there. I mean, Oopsie has way better stuff plus for him this year than last year, and it's still 98. So I kind of feel like Randy might end up being an average starting pitcher, really good for the Padres, decent for where anybody picked him up. But I'm not sure that I want to push him. And Mitch Keller, honestly, this is a group here where I would just be careful with them start to start. Like, I, you know, maybe Arrighetti can jump out of this if he has the good command this year.
Right.
But most of these guys.
That was cool, but we'll see.
Yeah, Liberatore, I'm only starting at home. Keller, I'm only starting at home. May, if I start him, I'm only starting at home. So these are a lot of guys that it matters who they're. This is streamer territory.
Absolutely. And so here, okay, Eno, you really.
Who did I call a streamer that you like?
92 versus 100. Uh-huh. Can you tell people what that is?
Do I have two 90s in there?
Number 92 is Kumar Rocker.
Uh-huh.
And Andrew Abbott is at 100.
Yeah.
Do you really think that Kumar Rocker is going to be a worthwhile starter this year?
No. But
sorry.
But let me say this. 93. I only ranked 125. So 93, you're getting to the bottom. He has a 3.93 ERA projection. I just kept staring at him and being like, where am I supposed to put this? You know, like it's like when your kid, you don't have this yet, but like it's like when your kid like gives you something gross to throw away and like just puts like some nasty ass thing in your hand and you're like, what am I supposed to do with this?
That is Kumar Rocker.
Yeah.
That's your convincing argument.
No, since I haven't, he's 3.93 ERA. You don't have to far. You have to go to Carmen Lozinski at 72 to get an ERA that starts at three.
Okay, and but then
you really have to go up to Reed Detmers.
Fantasy manager. If you're a fantasy manager, are you actually saying you have less faith of Andrew Abbott being a productive hold than Kumar Rocker?
Yeah, because I have zero faith in Andrew Abbott.
Zero.
I've never had
even with the track record from last year.
Yeah, I've told you before.
Okay.
His numbers lie because he's had good beginning of seasons, and then when he got real bad, he got injured and he left. Okay. So like, you know, I just think the story of his seasons has been like, hey, when it's cold, he can make it in Cincinnati, and then when it's warm, he can't. And well, now he's not making it when it's cold in Cincinnati.
All right. Well, you heard it here, guys. Rhett Lauder is better than 123. Okay, you have to go.
Rhett Lauder's velo is down.
Rhett Lauder is not a great pitcher. He is someone who surprisingly gets outs all the time. But, you know,
we're really making great arguments for our guys.
I mean, that's it. It's just 90s. Like, wow. All right. Like, the changeup and slider are good enough. And, like, you just had a nice stream.
He said he was Brady Singer.
Brady Singer?
You see that? Rhett Lauder said he was Brady Singer.
That's interesting. He has a changeup, though.
He was like, we're strike throwers with not great stuff. And, you know, I
do you know who Brady Singer is? I'm so sorry, Rhett. So sorry. All right.
Where did you put Robleski? Because
I put Robleski in that like 80-90 tier because I don't want him for 2 weeks. I don't want him for a bit because I don't like the schedule right now, and a 12-team is not worthwhile for me to hold it. Yeah. That's where I have Robleski, but I like him after that. And I love Tyler Mahle in a moment. I love he just allowed Aaron runs because then he now gets the Dodgers. I don't want to sign for that. So he won't be picked up by the time he goes for the Marlins. So that's kind of how I go after this. But that's going to do it for today. You know, these are my favorite episodes because I get to sound like a jerk all of a sudden, and it's great. It's such a rare feat. No, it's so hard to do this stuff. And so I have so much appreciation to get your takes on all of it.
But you're wrong.
Oh, gosh. All right. That is it for today. Eno, thank you so much for joining me today. What a wonderful guest, everybody. Once again, we get
the Knicks.
Here you go. Yeah,
finger guns. No more Knicks
from Eno. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.